Joanna stroked his midnight hair, trying to soothe him.
Greg, I told you. I was with Paul all that afternoon. I really was.
Shaking his head stubbornly, Greg insisted. He didn't have to do it himself. He could have hired someone.
He couldn't have.
Greg looked into his mother's eyes.
You have no idea of how low he really is, do you? Now, Greg, I won't listen.
You think he loves you? He loves the corporation. He loves that stupid moon base.
He's my husband, Joanna said.
Right, sure. And last night he was in bed with Melissa Hart.
Some husband.
Joanna could feel her face flame.
That's not true.
Isn't it? Do you think it's a coincidence that Melissa's been at the Houston and L.A. divisions the same time he's been there? Is it an accident that they both booked the same hotel in San Francisco?
Joanna's breath caught in her chest. She could not answer.
Why shouldn't he take his pick of younger women? Greg went on. He's the top dog now, isn't he? He's an important man, thanks to you. He can have any woman he wants.
You're lying.
Check with the travel office. The two of them have been traveling across the country together. Your black CEO and his black mistress.
But I thought Melissa...
Joanna ran out of words. Her thoughts were tumbling through her head. Melissa's a slut who'll sleep wherever the power is. You gave Paul the power, so she's gone back to him.
No,
she said weakly. He murdered my father, and he'll spit on you now that he's got what he wants.
No,
Joanna repeated desperately. Paul's not like that. He isn't. He's a cheat and a murderer.
No,
he is. I know he is. He murdered my father, and now he's cheating on you.
But why? Why would he murder your father?
To get you, Greg blurted. To get control of the corporation. To save his precious moon base.
Trying to drive thoughts of Paul in bed with Melissa out of her mind, Joanna shook her head stubbornly.
But he already had me, Greg. I loved him, and he loved me. We were going to tell your father sooner or later. I was going to get a divorce.
But if you divorced Dad, then Paul could never hope to get control of the corporation. He had Dad murdered so he could make himself CEO.
Joanna said again, No, Greg. Paul had no idea that he could become CEO. He was shocked when I told him I was going to nominate him.
And that was just a few minutes before the board meeting started, Joanna continued.
You were there. Didn't you see how stunned he looked?
I was there all right, Greg growled.
I know it was a shock to you too, dear. But I had to make Paul take over the company. I'm sorry I couldn't explain it to you beforehand.
He forced you into it, didn't he?
No, dear. He didn't know anything about it until just before the meeting started.
You didn't trust me to run the corporation. You still don't.
Patiently, trying her best to mollify her son, Joanna explained.
Greg, dearest, you're not ready yet.
I'm 28 years old. Dad wasn't much older when he took over from his father.
Joanna remembered. Gregory hadn't been ready either. And he never really learned how to make the corporation profitable. Under his direction, Masterson Aerospace staggered along from one crisis to another, until Paul pushed through the development of the Clipper ships. That saved us, she thought.
Greg,
she said to her son,
I know that Brad Arnold has been telling you he thinks you're capable of running the corporation, but Brad's merely flattering you.
Flattering?
Brad thinks that he can control you, and through you control the company. That's why I had to put Paul in charge. To stop Brad.
He couldn't control me.
He's very clever, Joanna said, and much more experienced in this kind of infighting.
He could never control me.
Joanna hesitated.
Then she said,
Now that I think of it, the only one who could possibly have thought he'd benefit from your father's death is Brad.
Greg's body twitched as if a live electric wire had touched him. He looked into his mother's eyes.
Brad?
He whispered, unbelieving.
Paul had no idea I'd nominate him, Joanna repeated slowly, thinking out loud. But Brad would have known that if your father died, he could make you CEO and run the whole company through you.
I told you he couldn't control me, Greg snapped.
Yes, yes, I know,
Joanna said quickly, stroking his hair again.
But Brad thought otherwise, I'm certain.
For several moments Greg remained still, his head in his mother's lap as she stroked him soothingly. At last he said, "Do you really think Brad murdered my father?"
"No," Joanna said softly. "I think your father committed suicide."
"But you said..."
"I said that the only one who would have profited from your father's death was Brad."
Before her son could insist he couldn't be controlled again, she added,
"At least he was the only one who thought he might have profited."
"Brad," Greg breathed. He stayed there kneeling at his mother's feet until the butler rang from downstairs to say that the moving men were waiting in their van for Greg to direct them to his new home. Then he kissed his mother's cheek and left the house. Joanna sat alone for most of the afternoon, trying to keep herself from phoning the travel office to see if Greg's accusation was true. Her son's voice kept ringing in her ears, half triumphant, half sneering. "Why shouldn't he take his pick of younger women? He's the top dog now, isn't he? He's an important man, thanks to you. He can have any woman he wants."
Mare Nubium. The moon turns very slowly on its axis. One complete revolution in just under 28 days. That's why Paul did not have a GPS signal to guide him as he pushed himself across the Mare, hoping that he was heading for the ringwall mountains of the giant crater Alphonsus. On Earth, 24 global positioning satellites are enough to provide pinpoint locating fixes for virtually any spot on the globe. The satellites' orbits are fixed in space while the Earth spins below them. No matter where on Earth you are, there are always at least 2 satellites above your horizon to give you a precise navigational fix. To get the same kind of coverage on the moon, with its slow rotation rate, takes many more satellites. The consortium of private companies and government agencies that had cooperatively set up the lunar GPS system had tried to strike a careful balance between practicality and cost. They had started with a network of 6 positioning satellites and were adding to the web from time to time. "Just my luck to be out here at a time when the 2 closest satellites are both too low on the horizon for my suit radio to pick up their signals," Paul grumbled. "Maybe it isn't luck. Maybe Greg timed it all. Is the kid that smart?" "What difference does it make?" he asked himself as he plodded across the barren lunar plain. Every few minutes he stopped to turn and see if his path remained straight, but he knew that was only the roughest of guides. You could be drifting off to one side or the other and never know it. He sucked up a mouthful of water, sloshed it around his teeth, and then swallowed it. "Hell," he muttered, "for all you know, you're heading for the pissin' South Pole by now. One of the GPS signals ought to come through pretty soon. I'll straighten out my course then. In the meanwhile, keep pushing ahead." In the back of his mind, Paul knew, as every astronaut knew, that what killed people on the moon was fatigue. More than equipment failure or ignorance or even bad judgment, simple fatigue could wear you down to the point where you forgot just one little vital thing, and then you were dead. Paul forgot about the dust. That powdery fine dust, like beach sand underfoot, was electrically charged by the constant infall of ionized particles from the solar wind. No matter how carefully you stepped, your boots stirred up little clouds of dust, and some of the stuff inevitably clung electrostatically to your suit. Through hard experience, the men and women who worked on the moon had learned to include a hand vacuum cleaner in the airlocks of their buried shelters. After an hour or so out on the surface, the suit needed a thorough cleaning. Otherwise, the dust would get into everything inside the shelter itself. It was more than an annoyance. Gritty dust particles worked their way into the hinges of spacesuits. If enough dust clogged the knees or other joints, the suit would stiffen up, just like the Tin Woodsman of Oz left out in the rain. The experienced astronaut listened carefully for grating noises in his suit, kept sensitive to whether or not the joints of his suit were moving smoothly. When they weren't too tired to remember, Paul plodded along. He knew that he had been down on all fours back at the glass-smooth crater that he had slid into. He knew, if he had thought about it consciously, that his gloves probably had a thin sheen of lunar dust clinging to them electrically.